Even though the topic is really not in order, we would have covered this much later on in the discussion of the Holocaust. But since it's germane to Purim, and I don't want to wait till next year to do it, but by that time I think we'll be finished with the topic altogether, so we'll do it now. There's a Gemara in Megillah on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu davened that Zemomo al Tofek, that God should not let Esav carry out his desire or his plan. And that refers, the Gemara says, to Germania shel Edom. Now, our Gemara is, say, Germania, with two mems. But the Vilna Gaon and Rabbi Yaakov Emden both had the version Germania, Germany. Germany of Edom. And the reason that it has connection to Edom, because Amalek came from Esav. He was Esav's grandson. From Eliphaz. Eliphaz married Timnah, and their offspring was Amalek. So, Germania shel Edom seems to say that there is a connection between Amalek and Germany. And again, both of these Gedolim, the Agroa and the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, did not live after the Holocaust. They lived about over 200 years ago. So what they said is not colored by what we know now from history. The Gemara also says in that place that there were 300 Kitre Taga, 300 different kingdoms, small kingdoms, duchesses in this Germania shel Edom. And the truth is that throughout history, there were 300 different districts that Germany was split up into, each one with its own duke. So it has a connection there also. So just a brief idea of what Amalek were. I'm not going to go into great detail because we won't finish the class tonight, if we go into a lot of detail on this, but over the years we've mentioned this. I'm just going to mention a few because a few points, because it's important then to relate them to what the Nazis were and what Hitler was or whatever, what he wanted to do. We've explained in the past that the difference, this is my understanding, the difference between Amalek and all our other enemies was that Amalek were the first atheists in the world. And until Amalek came along, there were two groups in the world. There were those who believed in God, and they believed that there were intelligent powers that created and guided the world. The only question is, was that one God, or were they diverse powers or whatever? And they believed you could pray to these powers, and you could bribe them, or whatever else would be. And Amalek introduced a new philosophy, but a total, chance, coincidence, accident. The world just evolved accidentally without any intelligent creator or intelligent guidance. And we said also that that's why it says that why Amalek are so terrible. Because they were the first people who attacked us after Kriyas Yamsuf. The entire world were afraid of us. Amalek wasn't afraid, and they attacked us. And we explained why weren't Amalek afraid. Because if you were an idolater, and you saw the splitting of the Red Sea, so you would have to conclude that there's some kind of intelligent power that is protecting and saving the Jews from their enemies, and you'd be afraid to start up with them. But if you were an atheist who saw that, you wouldn't come to any conclusion that there was any intelligent power, because you don't believe in intelligent powers. So you just say it was an accident. It was just a lucky coincidence. and therefore the odds of that lucky coincidence repeating itself are even less than happening the first time. So you wouldn't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. And therefore, they were the first ones to attack us, and they opened the floodgates for all the other attacks we've ever had in history. They were the first. In addition, we and Amalek represent two sides of like a tug of war. We're on one end believing in God. They're on the other end believing in nothing. The rest of the world is in the middle, and it's a tug of war between us and the Amalekim, who are going to influence the world. Are we going to bring the world from idolatry to belief in God, or are they going to bring the world from idolatry to total atheism? And therefore it says that as long as Amalek is in the world, God's throne isn't complete and his name is not complete. The meaning being that God's throne is the representation of his control over the world, his divine providence. So his throne isn't complete. The word kisei is reduced in the pasuk that speaks about Amalek, ki yod al keiska, to case. Kisei with the aleph is God sitting on the throne. When you see the king sitting on his throne, you know he's in control. When you see an empty throne, you don't know who's in control. So when you take the aleph out of kisei, you take God off the throne, you're left with case. Case means hidden. Everything is obscure. You can't really see God's presence in the world. And Yud Kei Vav Kei is God's full name. There it says Ka, Ki Yod Al Kei's Ka, just the Yud and the Hey. And we've explained that Yud Kei Vav Kei is Ha Yehovah Yeh, past, present, future. And the first two letters, Yud and Hey, are the letters you need to spell past and future. Ha Yeh and Yeh are just duplications of the letters Yud and Hey. The Vav Hey makes the present. As long as Amalek is in the world, so the past and the future are still there. You can see God in the past, learn the Torah. You can see him in the future, look at the Nevi'im. But it's hard to see him in the present. So the Vav Hey is missing. And that's why Amalek in Gematria is Safek, doubt. Because as long as Amalek are around, and they're strong in their atheism, all atheistic philosophies stem from Amalek, it puts doubts in our minds. Right, maybe Taka, maybe they're right. There's so many intelligent people that believe in evolution. Maybe this world did evolve. So it puts doubts and weakens our faith the stronger they are, and we weaken them the stronger we are. And one of the major differences between Amalek and idol worshippers is how they look at the Jewish people. Because what makes us important, we're an important people. But what makes us important is not external physical things. We're not the most numerous. We're not the strongest. We're not even the wealthiest. Bill Gates has not yet converted. And the Saudis are not Jewish. And the major wealth in the world is not in the hands of Jews. So we're not the wealthiest people. We're not the strongest people. We're not the most numerous people. So what makes us important? What makes us important is we have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah says that openly. Mi goy gadol asher lo Elohim krovim elav kashem elokeinu b'chol kareinu elav. Who is as great a nation as you, who has God so close to them that whenever we call out to him, he answers us as a nation. We've survived everything as a nation that other nations have disappeared from the face of the earth for. And that's one greatness. We have a special close relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially through prayer. And the second greatness is Mikoi Gadol Ashalo Hukim Mishpatim Tzadikim. What great nation has such a detailed Torah, right? Such righteous laws as we have. And most of the world recognizes that because they also adopted the Bible. They just added to it or changed it or whatever, but they recognize the fact that that's the book of books. And it makes us important because it shows that God cares about every single thing we do. What we eat, what we think, what we say, what we wear, right? Unless it would be important to him, why would he waste his time, right? Giving us a manual for things that are not important at all. You don't write a detailed instruction book for things that aren't important, only for things that are important. And God spends, 2 days a year judging every single thing that we did in the past year, what we said, what we ate, what we thought. You wouldn't do that for your dog. and the distance between you and your dog or your hamster or your goldfish or your bird, right, is infinitely less than the distance between the Rabban Shalom and us. Yet the Rabban Shalom spends 2 days going through, reviewing everything we did in the past year. It must be important to him. So it must be eternally and universally important. That's what makes us important. Special relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're an idol worshiper, you have to take that in consideration. Because they also believe in intelligence, intelligent powers, purpose, meaning to the world. They got it all wrong. They distort it. But the concept is there. And it's obvious that we have some power that we're close to because we're still around. And the other nations have disappeared. And they also accept the fact that we have this tremendous guidebook, which they've adopted a good portion of it too. So if you're an idol worshiper, these things make sense. They're meaningful to you. You may hate the Jews because you're jealous. You think they took what belongs to you, whatever it may be. But you have to take it into consideration. And if you're an atheist, those things mean nothing. How can you get close to a God who doesn't exist? How can you have a Torah that tells you what's right, wrong, good, bad, moral, immoral, if the whole world is an accident? Accident by nature, by its very essence, is meaningless, purposeless. It's an accident. So there can't be anything wrong about killing a human being, because he's an accident. So how could there be anything intrinsically wrong? The only kind of ethics that makes sense in a world of atheism is situational, relative ethics. Don't step on my toes, because otherwise I'll step on your toes and we won't be able to have a functioning society. So for practical purposes, we won't step on each other's toes. But if my feet are bigger and I can step on your toes and you won't step on my toes, then why shouldn't I step on your toes? So it's only relative ethics. There's no intrinsic value, meaning, or right, wrong, moral, anything. Right? No values, intrinsic values, in a world where everything is just chance and accident. Can't be, because the world came about in a purposeless, chance, accidental way. Well, that's another difference between Amalek, the atheist, and all the other nations that were idol worshippers. They see no importance in the Jewish people. And therefore, what runs the world? The idol worshipper thinks his gods run the world. But what does the atheist think runs the world? Survival of the fittest, the strongest. Right, more or less the most power runs the world. So the world has no guidance to it. It has no purpose to it. So whoever's stronger, he's in charge. And therefore, what's it called? That is the hallmark of Amalek. That they feel might makes right. And what runs the world is physical power or money. And they have no regard at all for the Jewish people. We are worthless. In their eyes, we're nothing, and that bothers them. That nothing thinks they're something, and that's why Amalek came from Timna and Eliphaz. Think about it psychologically. The reason that Amalek developed the philosophy of atheism, I guess psychologically, is because of who his parents were. Timna was a woman who wanted to join the Jewish people, and she came to convert to Avraham Avinu, and he rejected her. And she came again by Yitzchak, and he rejected her. And later on in life, she came to Yaakov, and he rejected her. After being totally rejected by all three Avos, she said, if I can't get into the front door of this family, I'll go through the back door. So she became a concubine, a pilegesh, to Eliphaz ben Esav, to Esav's son, Eliphaz. So her father was Eliphaz, and her mother was Timna. Now, when a person is rejected, the natural reaction is sour grapes. If he or she doesn't want me, then who needs them? They're nobody. Because if they're somebody, then somebody rejected me. But if they're nobodies, then nobody rejected me. Then who cares? So from their mother's side, they had a psychological need to make the Jewish people nothing. Worth nothing. Worthless. And then, these people rejected my mother, but they're worthless anyways. Who cares? So they needed a philosophy that would make the Jewish people worthless. And from their father's side, right, he came from Esav, who believed, Al-Char B'chotichya, you live by the sword. That might, physical might, runs the world, brute strength. His son, Eliphaz, was a little bit more refined. He believed that money was the thing that ran the world. That was his name, Eliphaz. My power, my God, is gold. That's the only God in the world, money. And that's why when he was sent by his father to kill Yaakov, he took away his money instead. Because he believed that that's what ran the world. So in any case, if you have a father that believes that might, power, money rules the world, you have a mother who was rejected by the Jewish people, the best philosophy to conjure up is atheism, and it serves both purposes. It makes the Jewish people worth nothing, and it makes what's it called, your understanding of what runs the world, money and power. Okay. So in any case, so that was the concept of Amalek. If that's the case, we can find a lot of different connections to Nazism. First of all, this idea that there was a Masorah, this Gemara, that seems to say Germania shel Edom, that Germany comes from Edom, comes from Esav, which very well could be from Eliphaz and Timna, which is Amalek. There's a greater connection. And that is that in 1899, Kaiser Wilhelm came to Yerushalayim. They built a special arch for him, which is the entrance to Shar Yafo. They built an arch commemorating his coming to Yerushalayim. And there's a halacha that you have to go out and greet and see non-Jewish kings, especially those that have the power of life and death. That's a mitzvah, to go and see non-Jewish kings. So when Mashiach comes, you'll be able to see the difference between what a non-Jewish king is and what a Jewish king is. It's a mitzvah. You know, when they coronated Queen Elizabeth, I was not there in the yeshiva, but they told me that, when was that, Chagi? 53. I'm surprised you both didn't stand up. The Telza Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Elimeir Bloch and Rav Muttel Katz, went to watch it on television. To be in the kind of mitzvah of seeing what's it called, Goyish kings and queens. So in any case, so all of the Rabbanim and Gedolim who were in Yerushalayim went to greet, to receive the Kaiser Wilhelm, except for Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, when he was asked why he didn't go, so he said he has a Masorah tradition from the Vilna Gaon that Germany is Amalek, and there's no mitzvah to go see Amaleki kings. He didn't go. I don't think that Masorah was strong enough that he went around killing Germans as Amalek. But at least not to have to go to see a German king, that much not. It's interesting also that World War II started on Yud Zayin Elul in 1939, which happened to be the Shabbos. It didn't start on Shabbos, it started, I think, on a Friday. But what? On a Sunday? That was Yud Zayin Elul Tarzat. And that Shabbos, that next Shabbos, was Parshas Kisavo, which speaks about Zohar Yisashur HaSoch HaMolech. So that's another connection. Eichmann wrote that when they had the Idas Vaneza, which was on January 20th, 1942, that was in Berlin. What?
Wansi.
Wansi, that's what it's called? In Hebrew they write it like this. Okay, that was a street in Berlin. It's the name of the street in Berlin. That's where they had this conference with all of the heads of the SS, and that's where they formulated finally the plan to the final solution, the destruction of European Jewry. And he describes that they drank and they sang, what's it called, and Mamash like Vamelech Vahaman Yashvu Lishtos, when they decided to destroy Klal Yisrael by Haman, very similar description of what they did then. In addition, this is brought down in a few different places, but Eisha Torah I know has it in their discovery program. The Asheres B'nei Haman have large and small letters in their names that are the Masorah, to write those letters either larger or smaller than regular. In what's it called? In the name Parshandosa, the Tuf is small. In the name Parmashta, the Shin is small. In the, what's it called? In the name Vaizosa, the Vav is big and the Zion is small. You put all those letters together, you get Tuf Shin Zion, which is, 1947. And you get also the Vav, which is the 6,000th year. In other words, 5,300 and Tuf Shin Zion. 5,707. Okay, now it's 66. So that was, 59 years ago. And Vav means that it's in the, that was the big one, it was in the 6,000th year. In other words, 5,707. And what happened in 5,707 that had a connection to Aseres B'nei Haman, I think it was on Hoshana Rabbah, in 1947, they finished the Nuremberg trials. And they took out, there were 11 Nazis that were to be hung. The night before the hanging, right, I think Goering, what's it called? Who? Yes. Goebbels? One of them committed suicide. Goering, okay. Committed suicide. That left 10. And Streicher, who was the head of the Ta'amula, the propaganda of Nazi Germany. So he, what's it called? It was Hoshana Rabbah 5707, which was 1946. It wasn't yet 1947. And when his turn came to be hung, he proclaimed Purim Fest 1946. Now the Jews are celebrating their Purim now with 10 Nazis being hung. And the what's it called? The hint in the Megillah was to something that would happen in 5707, right, of the 5707, that would have a connection to Aseres B'nei Haman, and this is what this is seemingly what that hint was.
He also said about Goering, who committed suicide. I think he jumped off the building or something.
I think he poisoned himself.
Yeah. He was a cross-dresser, and he compared him to the Haman's daughter, who
In any case, so the Nazis, every Purim, one of the things that they did was take out 10 Jews and just hang them arbitrarily as a revenge against Aseres B'nei Haman. The Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Oh, wait, that's next. Hitler in Mein Kampf wrote that we Nazis are barbarians and we have to teach the world how to be barbarians, meaning there are no morals, no values, right? They totally made the world a place of no meaning. That's exactly what we said atheism is. There's no intrinsic value, morals to the world. And he said, and we accuse the Jews. One of the tainas he had on the Jewish people is that we gave the world a conscience. We made the world think there's right and wrong, moral and immoral, and in that way we blemished or mutilated the world's conscience, and we also mutilated the body with Bris Milah. And it says Amalek also went after Bris Milah. They detested the concept of Bris Milah, and they mutilated Jews in that way. And here also, Hitler said, we mutilated the world through Bris Milah, the body of the world, and the conscience of the world by giving the world a conscience. And he says, in Mein Kampf, the German people have to go according to their yicharim, according to their drives, without any thought of right, wrong, or whatever. And they did a good job of it, Lamaisha. And Hitler himself saw himself as the representative of nature, right? The natural forces of the world that fought against the Jewish people, who represented something against nature, unnatural, which is all part of this idea of atheism and what Amalek represented. And he said that the war that they're waging, the war basically is between the German people and the Jews, and everything else is just what's it called, an illusion. Every other thing, and he was true to his word, because he probably lost World War II because he was obsessed more with killing Jews than fighting the war properly. Had he diverted supplies to his troops instead of using the trains to ship Jews to their death, he may have won the Second World War. But a lot of the problems were because he diverted his major efforts into killing Jews rather than just flying his own troops. Okay. Next. The Rav Elchanan Wasserman points out that the two basically atheistic philosophies that were rampant at that time were communism and nationalism. And by Jews, the nationalism was secular Zionism, which basically was, both of them were atheistic and just had different ideas. And Nazism, what was their official title? The official title of Nazism was the National Socialist Party. So it put together nationalism and socialism. Those two Avodah Zarahs, which weren't really Avodah Zarah, those two atheistic philosophies came together, and that basically was a punishment for Jews who embraced, on the one hand, socialism and communism, and on the other hand, secular nationalism, secular Zionism. That's what he says. So those are the connections between Nazism and Germany and Amalek. Again, nobody can be sure that any specific German is, first of all, a real German. And whether, in fact, halachically, Germany is Amalek. So don't, go out and kill Germans or Nazis from the time of the mitzvah. But there's a lot of seemingly interesting connections between the two. Until Mashiach comes, we have no idea who Amalek is. And that's what's called, that's the way it will remain.